We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Well, this is Focus from Illinois Public Media on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. If parents are unable or unwilling to care for their children, the state may step in, immersing kids in a system that involves the courts, social workers, and more. In many Illinois counties, court-appointed special advocates, or CASA, volunteers are able to make sure kids don't get lost in that system. The mission of CASA is to speak for the best interests of abused and neglected children who are involved in the juvenile courts. Today on Focus, we'll look at the work of CASA and the needs of the children it serves. Listeners, I look forward to your questions and comments. Join us with a phone call or by email. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. We have two guests with us this morning. Rush Record is the executive director of Champaign County Court Appointed Special Advocates. Prior to joining CASA, he worked for 13 years as a juvenile probation officer in Champaign County. He's also worked with the Champaign School District. Howie Shine is also with us this morning. He was the director of the Unit 1 program at Allen Hall at the University of Illinois for 35 years. He is an adjunct associate professor of education, policy, organization, and leadership at the U of I, and he is a CASA volunteer. Again, the phone number is 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Rush, Howie, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Rush, would you give us a little background on CASA and CASA in Champaign County?
Sure. CASA is a part of a national organization that started in the 70s out in the Washington state. There was a juvenile abuse neglect judge there that realized the cases he was seeing, the information he was getting was 99% geared towards the parents or the caregivers, and very little was geared towards the children. So CASA was created in Washington state. In 1994, CASA was welcomed into the court system here in Champaign County as a friend of the court model. It's, as many nonprofits do, it started as a very grassroots organization with one or two-man operation and has grown to where we are today. In 2002, we changed over to a guardian ad litem model, and what that means is not only do we provide volunteer advocates like Howie, but we also provide legal representation for the kids. And in Champaign County, it's unique that we have the contract with Champaign County, and we provide that service to all abused and neglected kids in the court system.
In broad strokes, would you offer us a look at who the children served by CASA are?
Well, the children come from all walks of life. I mean, that's one of the myths of abuse. I think that, people think there's a stereotypical abuse case, and there's not. We get kids from all walks of life, all part of the county, from birth up into, we have some kids that are older in the system, up to 21 years old. So the range of abuse is all across the spectrum from medical issues to actual physical abuse.
Yeah. Howie, as I mentioned, the mission of CASA is to speak for the best interests of abused and neglected kids. What does having a CASA volunteer mean to a child?
Well, I have a feeling that the children feel that there's someone speaking for them. Now, some of the kids have to be of a certain age to be able to conceptualize that who we are. Obviously, if a child is under a certain age, it's just this other adult in their life. And then when the kids are of a certain age, they understand that they are represented in court. And I know that there's a lot of volunteers who report that when they tell the kids, basically, you have a lawyer to represent you in court, they're real surprised to say, oh, I have a lawyer. And it makes them feel, I think, a little bit more that they have an entitlement to have their voice heard and that they aren't going to be the recipient of somebody else's decisions without having some type of a say-so in the outcome. And there also is the case that there are kids who are moved from caregivers. They might switch foster care a lot. In my training, we were told that the average case takes up to 2 to 2.5 years. And in that time, many of these kids are moved, their placement changes. You can see kids whose placement is in 4, 5, 6 different foster homes or family care and stuff. But the CASA person who works with them is a constant in their lives. And I have a feeling that having a constant in your life makes a real big difference in how you feel about whether or not life happens to you, mm-hmm. or you can have something to do with what happens in your life.
Yeah, you have a guidepost there, mm-hmm. as the ground is moving around on you. How much say-so do the children have?
The children have a lot of say-so, and you know, that's through the voice of the CASA and the attorney, and that's why CASA was created. We're fortunate here to have a strong support by the judiciary and really value the recommendations made by the CASA advocates. And that report is filed with the court as all other reports are in the case from other agencies, so it carries the same weight that many of the social service agencies submit reports to the court. So it's a very important role that we have, and it's for the kids, it's a very strong advantage for them to be heard.
Can you offer us a story or two that illustrates what having an advocate has meant to an individual child, or, you know, a couple of kids, with, you know, with, and we don't want to talk about specific
right.
cases, but broadly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the story that we tell a lot is that, you know, there was a little 6-year-old girl who came into court, and obviously she'd been abused. I mean, it was apparent that she'd been abused, and the judge at the time was on the bench and could tell that she had something on her mind and felt that he wanted to talk to her, so he called her back into chambers. And, you know, after a few minutes of making her feel comfortable having her realize that, you know, the judge is really a person, not just this person up in a black robe, she warmed up a little bit, and he said, you know, is there something you want to say? And she said, yeah. And he said, well, what is it? And she said, well, can I go home today with my mom and dad? And mind you, obviously she had been abused. And he said, you know, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that today. You know, they've got some things they need to work on. We need to work on those before we talk about that. And she said, okay. And she got sad. And he said, is there anything else? And she said, yes. She said, you know, if you let me go home today, I promise I won't be bad, so they won't beat me anymore. And that really sums up what these kids feel. They, more often than not, they want to go back home. Regardless of what has happened to them, mom and dad are still mom and dad, and they want to go back home. So in that role, CASAs can really get involved in that case, and you know, if it's appropriate for her to go back home, we'll sure recommend that, and we'll sure, you know, support the parents, provided that they're doing what the judge has asked them to do. But there are also cases, you know, that CASAs may have to make difficult decisions, and it may not be in her best interest to go back home. So, you know, that we have cases like that all the time. You know, we have some cases, as Howie said, that last 2 years or more. We have some that have lasted 5, 6 years. But then there's also a few that are a shorter period of time where whatever the problem was gets solved relatively quickly. And CASAs still have a pretty great impact on that as well.
This is Focus. Good morning. My name is Celeste Quinn. We're talking today about Champaign County CASA, the court-appointed special advocate program. Our guests this morning are Howie Shine and Rush Record. Listeners, you can join us this morning with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. We have a listener joining us this morning on line 4 in Indiana. Good morning.
Hello. I thought I'd just sit here and listen to it, but one of the men said something that I need to ask about. The other comment is I have a friend that's a member of this group, and she told me yesterday, just by coincidence, that she has a very difficult case coming up. She's going to have to advocate that the child does not return to the home and all that kind of thing. But you said something about placement of foster children, that a child could be placed within the system from, I guess, person to person while they're being adjudicated in some sense. And I found that very striking. In fact, I would find that, you know, sort of contributory to the problem generally. I wonder if you could speak to that. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, that the foster placement is a quite an issue, and with a lot of other things, foster families can be very difficult to find. And a lot of times a child will be placed in one foster home, and for whatever reason that may not work out, and they'll have to be moved again, and in some cases moved, you know, multiple times. And there can be a lot of factors in that. It could be, a chemistry issue with the foster parent and the child. It could be a licensing issue. Things change in people's lives, and the foster parents may not be able to continue the care of the child. So one of CASA's goals is to reduce the amount of time kids are in foster placement. And that's a nationwide goal, and the theory is that with CASA's involved in that, we can hopefully stabilize that situation. A lot of times, children will be placed in foster placements, and those kids may ultimately be adopted by that foster family. So that can happen as well.
Okay. Howie, what's the work of a volunteer like day-to-day? I mean, I'm getting a sense that you have the court itself. You might have a social worker, you might have a school teacher, you might have a foster family. Tell us about negotiating all that.
Okay. When I talk to the people I train with, how often we actually go face-to-face and talk with the kids that we're advocating for changes depending on our perception of how effective it is and distance. Since we're in Champaign County, and some of our kids are placed actually outside of Champaign County, there are some of us that have an hour drive in each direction, which means that we have to negotiate that and probably don't go as often. We're allowed to merely drop in on a family unannounced, which sometimes is a good idea so that they don't prepare for us and so that we see the kids in their natural setting. But going at least once a month to talk with the children is something that we are strongly encouraged to do. So, and then as a result of talking to them and as a result of communicating with their caseworker, certain issues come up that we'd like to know more about. And I can give you some examples.
Mm-hmm.
We do have the right as guardian ad litem to talk to certain people in the children's lives, like their school teachers. If the kids are in counseling, we can talk to their counselors. If their parents are trying to resolve their issues are in counseling, with the parents' signed permission to their counselor, we can talk to that person. If the parents are on parole or probation, we can talk to those people. So in that way, we can put together a story mm-hmm. that the kids might not know about or might know about, although the kids that once they get to be adolescents, they pretty much have an idea of what's going on, but they don't know all of it. So our job is to put together a more complete story so everything makes sense. And a lot of this can happen online, so that if there's an awful lot of information, if the parents are involved in the justice system, almost all of that is public access mm-hmm. information. And making phone calls and stuff like that. So I guess being a detective in a certain sense and putting together a story so that you can tell the judge what you think is going on and what you recommend, and the children's voice is part of that story.
And do you also, as part of this, tell that story to the children depending on their age?
Partly. And one of the things that I found is I sometimes, if I'm not sure if the kid is ready to handle the issue that I need to resolve, I'll talk to their counselor and get the counselor's advice. And sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no. They're not ready to deal with that particular issue, or yeah. they don't have the picture, and they'll think that now you're against them.
Yeah. And that brings up a good point, too, that it's important to understand that we're not a mentoring program. And one of the reasons that we make that distinction is exactly that question. We can't really cross that line to be mentors because we may have to recommend something that the child may not want to happen. So that's important that we maintain that relationship a little bit there so that if we have to do that, then we don't become another person in the child's life that they might feel has abandoned them. So we try to make sure that we don't cross that line.
What's the commitment on the part of a volunteer to a child and then to the program over time?
Well, we ask them when we do, recruiting events, we ask to commit to us for 2 years, if at all possible. And the reason that is because that, tends to be the average amount of time. We certainly understand that life happens in a sense, and sometimes we get CASAs that something unforeseen has happened and they've had to drop out of the program, and that's certainly fine. But, again, once we have a CASA that takes a case, we really want them to follow through, if at all possible, so that we remain that constant. Because, especially in the budgetary climate that we have at this point in Illinois, and this is no fault of the agencies, that, caseworkers come and go and supervisors come and go, and we want to be the constant. We want to be the ones that, don't do that to keep the continuity of the case going. Their caseworkers are huge. Their caseloads are big. They're overworked and underpaid. And one of the other roles that we have for CASAs that may not feel like they can take a case on is we have a component of the program where we have to do home visits on all these kids. And we have a large gap between the amount of children we have and the amount of CASAs we have for one-on-one service, but we still have to do home visits on each and every child. So we have the ability for people to come in and volunteer and just do the home visit piece for us, and a lot of people like to do that. You get to interact with a lot of kids in a lot of different situations.
So what is the need and what's the unmet need?
Well, we have, as of today, a little over 520 children in the system, which is roughly 220 to 240 cases. Some cases have multiple children. That's why they're disparaging the number there.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 140 CASAs on the books. Now, that doesn't mean we have 140 CASAs assigned to 140 cases, but obviously, the ultimate goal of the program is to have a CASA for every child. So the ultimate goal would be to have, over 200 CASAs that could work with all the children that we have in the system. So there is a gap there between the amount of cases that we have and the amount of CASAs that we have. So the need is great as always.
It also happens to be National Volunteer Week, and it also happens to be National Prevent Child Abuse
Correct.
And Neglect Month. So I'm really happy that the two of you are here and talking with us this morning about this really important issue. This is Focus, and we're talking today about CASA, the CASA program, the Court-Appointed Special Advocate program. The mission of CASA is to speak for the best interests of abused and neglected children who are involved in the juvenile courts. Our guests this morning are Rush Record and Howie Shine. My name is Celeste Quinn. We're going to get right back to our discussion. We need to take a moment here, though, to ask you for your support to keep Focus on the air Monday through Friday here on WILL. And Les Schulte is with me in the studio now, with us. So there are four of us here now. And Les, give us your best pitch here.
Well, first off, Celeste, I want to thank Terry Jobin from Champaign and Margaret Ballantyne, also from Champaign, who've just made their pledges of support, and we appreciate their support. And I know if they were right here in the studio, that we would cram them in, and they would say,
Do
your part and make your call right now. As a listener, you're an important part of our community, and now we're encouraging you really to take that next step and call with your pledge of support. You're not alone. Thousands of people have already decided to support WILL with a pledge. So why don't you join them right now? Make a $120 a year contribution to WILL. That's just $10 a month. That's an investment of $10 a month, and you can put that on a monthly payment plan if that works best for you or your credit card, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or American Express. But it really starts with your call right now. If you appreciate a program like Focus as a community resource, support it. 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org.
Thanks, Les. This is Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn, and we're talking today about CASA, the Court-Appointed Special Advocate program. And our guests with us this morning, Rush Record, Executive Director of Champaign County Court-Appointed Special Advocates, and Howie Shine. He is a volunteer for CASA. Well, what would the two of you like us to know about what we often refer to as the safety net for kids, the child welfare system nationally in Illinois and here in our area?
Well, in Illinois, I think, you know, everybody, it's probably no secret that everybody knows the budgetary problems that we have, and these people are very, very hardworking. It's a very difficult job. Their caseloads are very high. Turnovers very high as well because of the stress level. And, you know, the system over the course of the time that I've been here has changed to the point that the cases that we see in the court system, the levels of abuse are more severe than they were in the past. The child welfare system is going to a model where they want to try to divert people from the court system, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. I think they try to put some services into place on the front end. You know, that requires the manpower and the funding that they have. One of the big problems that we're running into now is the not just the actual agencies like DCFS, Catholic Social Service, and Lutheran Social Service. It's the actual counseling contracts that these people need to tap into. That money's starting to be cut, and it's difficult to get counseling for kids, for parents, for families, mental health counseling, substance abuse counseling. It's very difficult to get those things right now, and the result is going to be, if something doesn't turn around soon, is going to be that these kids are ultimately going to be in foster care longer, and in some cases through no fault of their own, because the services may not be available for their caregivers to get them back. You know, if you've got a parent who has been directed by the judge maybe to get some mental health or substance abuse counseling, yet the first time they can get into that system is 6 months out, the child becomes the victim again. So, you know, it's very difficult, and the role that those agencies play is imperative, and unfortunately, money's starting to get in the way of that.
Yeah. Howie, from your perspective as a volunteer, what do you see?
Well, when I was training last summer, it was very interesting because most of the people in my training group had backgrounds similar to mine, middle-class backgrounds, where no one would ever claim their parents were perfect, but their parents were always there for them, and they were dependable. And one of the things about most of the kids in the system is that all the kids, although the kids conceptualize that these are my parents, from our viewpoint, these parents aren't capable of providing a safe place for their kids to be. And I would like all children to be in a position, in a family position, where they can thrive. And yet we are looking for the word safe as a bottom line and maybe the best that we can do. And you know, all my life I've been working with young people, and just the joy of seeing someone grow is what I want all children to be able to experience. And when we talk about these kids, they're just starting steps and steps behind even when their lives get settled out. And to change a little bit on tack, I think that the reason I became a CASA was I was just having a conversation with a friend who was one, and he described what he did. And I said, that's a place where I might be able to have a one-on-one impact. Because up until now, I've been working with groups of people. And I just said, if I can have an impact on helping a child become, to get their potential, to have an outlet for development, that would just be a wonderful thing to be able to experience.
Yeah, I remember back in the days when I was a reporter sitting in courtrooms and seeing kids adjudicated or young parents in a whole lot of trouble. I kind of always, in the back of my mind, even though it wasn't really part of the what I was going to report that day, what happened and what could we do in order to short-circuit that mess?
Right, right. And that's, you know, we get these kids after the abuse has occurred, and that's sometimes difficult, and that's why this is a very unique volunteer opportunity from a different standpoint. One is, you know, you get the access to the court system and the input to the court system that I can't think of another volunteer opportunity where you have that kind of impact. there's an emotional factor that goes along with that as well. You know, and there's the time commitment. You know, we try to be as upfront with people as we can when we talk to them about the time commitment. And a lot of times we'll get a response that, you know, I really want to help you out. I just can't do it right now. So, you know, we just encourage anybody who's really thinking about it to give us a call, and we'll talk you through it, and we'll be honest with you about, you know, the time commitment and the role that you're going to play and the things that you'll deal with.
Mm. What was the training process like?
I loved it. I've gone through 8 million trainings in my lifetime through the organizations. This was the most relevant training to job performance that I've ever had. We had a lot of people talking with us from both the concept viewpoint and the hands-on viewpoint. We talk with judges. We talk with CASA lawyers. We talk with public defenders. We talk with state's attorney. We talk with other CASAs. And we talked amongst ourselves and brought up issues, and it was a very dynamic process. And at the end, most people were a little hesitant because, you know, you're just then, and I just jumped right in. You have the opportunity to have a current CASA person take you on their case and kind of mentor you through it. And some people did that, and other people just said, I got to get going. And that was, I took the first case that came up that my supervisor thought was relevant to me. And as an adult person who can speak and interact with people, that's really all you need. And the rest, just it just happens. And I also think that the supervision along the way is wonderful. So whenever I have a question, should I be doing this? What's the next route? I either call or go into the office. And when I leave, I know what to do next.
Yeah. Howie, a couple of minutes ago you talked about going into the training and having your eyes opened. And this leads me to ask the question of you and of Rush, how well informed are we as members of the public, particularly if we're middle class and have a certain amount of privilege, how well informed are we of what's happening?
Well, I don't know. To be honest, I think that, you know, a lot of times when we just put the numbers out there, that alone has an impact with the amount of kids that we have in the system. You know, I looked it up one time, and when we had over 500 kids, you know, I believe Unit 4 only had one elementary school that had that many kids in the whole building. So, you know, it's child abuse is difficult to talk about. It's one of those things sometimes people don't want to talk about. And, you know, it's all confidential in nature. So, you know, the stories that we tell have to be very, very general. We can't, you know, use specifics. And so sometimes I think that, you know, might mask the actual problem. But, you know, when I talk about the numbers of kids we have, those are just the kids actually in the court system. You know, I don't know how many kids are out there that maybe there have been calls to DCFS and they haven't made it to court yet. You know, as busy as that agency is, I can tell you that, you know, there has to be quite a few. And I know from personal experience that any time that we've ever had to call the DCFS hotline to report a suspected case of abuse, there's almost always a wait. They almost always have to call you back in a couple hours. And that is one of the things that really hits you the hardest when the hotline has to tell you, you know, I've got to call you back in a couple hours because our volume's so high. So it's just the numbers can do a lot of impact on people and the stories, but, you know, you don't ever have the opportunity to see it in court because you can't get in there. So it's very prevalent, not only here, but nationwide. You know, there's statistics out there that there's kids that actually die from child abuse every year. So it's one of those things as a society we need to deal with.
Mm. Let's take a call. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Good afternoon. Thank you, gentlemen, and thank you both for being involved in CASA. It's a wonderful organization. I was a children's advocate in a domestic violence shelter for 2+ years, and I think you just commented on something I wanted to say. It is a very hidden system, and it's something that most people aren't aware of, and they hear about how underfunded the services are, but they really don't have any comprehension. I think the one that was most glaring to me was a a parent has a right to have visits with their children, and that's a good thing. But often there's no supervisors available. If say, a man or a woman has custody of their children because their partner is abusive, they sometimes have to end up supervising those visits, and that's not something CASA does, I know, but it points out the strangeness of our system. But I do want to say to anybody listening, CASA is a wonderful organization. I worked with, I think, 5 or 6 children and young adults who were involved in CASA, and the thing that I felt was most significant was it was, as you said, a point of stability. It was someone who, first of all, wasn't at the shelter, wasn't involved in DCFS, wasn't their counselor, basically was viewed as a mentor by the children, and someone who was there for them regardless of all the changes they went through. And I think that was incredibly important for the young people I worked with, to have that stability in a relationship and to have someone who they felt listened to them and cared about their concerns. I don't think you can even describe how important that is to a child who needs stability. I mean, children just do, and it's totally lacking in their lives. So to have that point of contact is wonderful, and that was my main thrust. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this morning. You want to follow up with a comment?
Well, one thing to make clear, I think, is that the system wants the kids to be placed in a stable, long-term environment. And so what we're dealing with is kids in a temporary situation, even though we talk about 2 years. What the primary goal seems to be is to take the kids out of a setting that's abusive to them and encourage the parents, the guardian, to get their act together so that they're capable of getting their kids back and being good parents. If the system is such that the parents can't get the services to do that, it's also harming the kids because the kids stay in limbo. And we want the kids to get into stability. The other part is that it's hard to realize that there could be parents who just can't get their act together no matter what services they get.
Mm-hmm.
And there are parents who just don't care to get their act together. And that is something that, from my experience, is a tough one to deal with, because all the parents I knew, no matter how good or bad they were amongst my peers growing up, they wanted to be good parents. And it is not that much of a statement of the motivation of the parents. It's just that not everybody is in a good mental place to be a parent.
Well, it's also a very complicated system. It's just, the steps and the types of hearings that have to take place and the rules and regulations that the agencies have to go through can make it very complicated. And, that's all the more important for a program like CASA to be here to try to, work through a lot of that. We're really the program that provides the unbiased and kind of impartial eyes and ears for the judge. We're not, we don't have to worry about state budgets and state caseloads and things. We usually can just put it out there. A lot of times the agencies, through no fault of their own, their hands are tied on certain things. They may have certain requirements they have to meet before they can make certain recommendations. So that makes the system a little bit more complicated and can muddy the waters a little bit. Yeah.
Well, you have an outstanding force of volunteers, but you do have to have some staff. And so how are you funded?
We're a nonprofit. And I'm telling everybody lately, fortunately, we have one small grant from the state of Illinois. We're not heavily funded by the state. We do have a contract with Champaign County to provide GAL services, which helps us offset the attorney costs. And the
GAL
overhead.
Is?
That stands for guardian ad litem.
Okay.
It means an attorney, roughly. We do have very strong support from the United Way of Champaign County, both with grant funding from them and designations for people who've donated through the United Way. We do a lot of private fundraising on our own, and we do write grants here and there. We do have myself and 3 other paid staff. we're in the process of, you know, exploring options and strategic plans about when the program grows, how are we going to fund the growth? So, you know, for us, fundraising is a necessary part of what we do in order to survive. We fundraise slightly over 50% of our budget. So, you know, the more awareness that we have in the community, there's a two-prong effect for us, which is volunteers and fundraising.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to parents, because it's clear that there are some parents who are they're not interested, right? But then there are parents who are interested. So when they get it turned around, what do they have to say about that process and how they did it? And are there parents who, just by the sheer force of will, do it?
There are some. There are some parents that, you know, this is probably one of the strongest wake-up calls they've ever gotten, and a lot of parents take it to heart that, wow, this is real and I may actually lose my kids. And there are some cases where, you know, we're right up to the line of the case being in court for some time and right up to the point of making a decision and a parent can turn it around. So there are those cases, and, you know, those kids may hopefully return home. Sometimes kids get adopted outside of the home. There are a certain, you know, set that for whatever reason are not necessarily interested in the kids coming back. And that's probably the hardest for, you know, us to swallow and most CASAs to swallow. You know, most of us have kids and just don't understand that. But a lot of times there's a lot of other factors that we just don't understand. You know, we do like to see kids go home. We like to see parents do what they're asked to do by the court. And we fully support that when it's appropriate.
Yeah. Early in the interview, Rush, you talked about a six-year-old girl who she was in court and she wanted to go home that day to her parents. And she was saying, I'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the space of 2 years, which you said is the average time that a child may be in the system, what happens, and when and how are cases closed, and where are the children at the end of that 2 year period, 5 year period?
Well, a lot happens during the course of the cases. Usually at the beginning of the case, there's a lot more court involvement until we get to a point of a little bit more stability. So you have more frequent court hearings. There can be a lot of interaction between the agencies and the caregivers. You know, more often than not, it's you know, addressing what the abusers need to take care of. So whatever factors have factored into the course of the abuse, you know, the judge basically tells them, here's what we need to do, and the agency lets them know, here's what we expect for you to do. If you do that, you know, X, Y, and Z will happen over the course of time. As far as cases concluding, can be any number of factors. You know, obviously one can go back to home. Two, kids get adopted out of the system. And then, you know, some we have what's called termination of parental rights, which is a court hearing and a court finding that the parents can no longer care for their kids other than financial circumstances alone, and their rights are terminated. And then the kids can be adopted, or, you know, long-term foster care is an option, but that's something that most people don't want to use a lot because that's sometimes not the best situation for the kids. So, and then there are some kids that actually age out of the system. They get to a point where, you know, 21 or so, and there's not much else the state can do for them. And
you hope they're capable of.
Right. And sometimes some of those kids will come and say, you know, I'm done. I don't want this involvement anymore. But other times it just gets to the point where there's nothing else that the state can do.
Yeah. Howie, I know that you haven't been a volunteer for a very long time. Maybe you're halfway through your 2 year commitment. But have you witnessed children changing and things improving? Do you see kids beginning to blossom? Sometimes we're remarkably resilient, all of us. And I'm wondering, have you been with cases now where you've seen, hey, this is moving in the right direction?
Well, I'm only have one case that I work on one case. And what surprises me in a positive way is that these kids are tough and that they're doing okay in school. They are doing well in school despite what's going on around them. The child who is old enough to understand what's going on does understand what's going on. And I think counseling does make a difference. And that's one of the sad parts about the state budget is that they need these backup services tremendously to help them understand what's going on around them and to not themselves become angry adults who repeat the parenting model that they have.
Yeah. How important are community organizations in being, pillars? I'm thinking of the school, the teacher, the principal, the guidance counselor. I'm thinking of Boys and Girls Club.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of some other organizations that are out there in the community working with children and on children advocacy. How important are those organizations, and what's the need there for people to get involved and volunteer?
Well, you know, the more people involved, the better. And the schools are a huge part of this. I mean, the kids spend more time at school a lot of times than any other place. You know, a lot of kids get most of their nutrition from the school system, you know, on some occasions. So all the people involved in these kids' lives, as long as everybody works together as best we can, are going to have a pretty positive impact on kids' lives. And that's why it's important that when we get appointed to the case that we have access to that. You know, it really will helps Howie to be able to talk to a school social worker when there's an issue. It helps him to be able to talk to a counselor when there's an issue. If we didn't have that ability, you know, the lines of communication would be even more difficult. You know, telling a story about a case, you can tell he's struggling with confidentiality today on the radio, and that's just a factor, and we want to maintain that confidentiality. If we're not appointed and don't have the ability to get that information, then we don't do a whole lot of good. You know, a lot of times the school can't even tell us a child's there. So all the agencies that are here, we all have specific roles, but when we work together, we can do the best for all these kids.
Yeah. Maybe I'll put in a plug for the afternoon magazine today. We're going to have a couple of guests in during the noon hour to talk about some of the opportunities that are available in the summertime for kids to keep them safe, engaged, and they have some opportunities to have a good time and to socialize, and it might enrich them for, you know, what lies ahead for them in school come the fall, or what their interests might develop into as they grow and mature. So that's today in the noon hour of the afternoon magazine. And coming up soon, there's going to be a fair in Champaign-Urbana, and lots of community organizations will be on hand to tell people what's available for summer activities. And I think one of the key things is now's the time to look into that.
Right.
This is Focus. We're talking this morning about CASA, the Court-Appointed Special Advocate Program. The mission of CASA is to speak for the best interest of abused and neglected children who are involved in the juvenile courts. And our guests this morning are Rush Ricord. He is the Executive Director of Champaign County Court-Appointed Special Advocates. Prior to joining CASA, he worked for 13 years as a juvenile probation officer in Champaign County. He's also worked with the Champaign School District. Also with us this morning, Howie Shine. He was the director of the Unit 1 program at Allen Hall at the University of Illinois for 35 years. He's an adjunct associate professor of education, policy, organization, and leadership at the U of I. He's a CASA volunteer, and he's been involved his entire life with children, with students, and he also happens to be involved with kids of all ages, as they say, in swimming. Listeners, we invite you to join us this morning with questions, comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address, if you'd like to drop us a message, will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, what's the need out there at the moment for foster care families and for adoptive families?
It's very high. Foster care families are very hard to find. I know that when the agencies are trying to place kids in foster homes, oftentimes the kids have to be placed a relative distance away from their actual home because of the lack of foster care availability. So foster care families are in need, and adoptive homes just as much. You know, there's a lot of kids out there that could be adopted if there's willing people to do that. So the need is great.
And if people are interested in exploring those possibilities, how do they go about doing that?
Well, anybody interested in becoming a foster parent should probably call DCFS office and inquire as to how they can start that process. The social service agencies in town, Catholic Social Service and Lutheran Social Service, also will have adoption programs, and those agencies can let you know what you need to do to go through that process.
Okay. And if someone is interested in becoming a volunteer with CASA, what's that process like?
Well, they can call our office, 384-9065, or look at our website, which is CASA4kids.org. And the information is on the website, or just give us a call. We're actually going to start a new class the first week in June. So our goal is to have a sizable class again of CASA advocates. The only requirement is we do require that you be 21 years old. We'll take it from there. There's an application process, a background check you have to go through. But if anybody has any questions, just give us a call at the office. We'll be happy to walk anybody through any questions they have and walk you through the process. You know, this being Child Abuse Prevention Awareness Month, we really try to hit things pretty hard. There'll also be some information on our website about some local fundraisers people are having for us this month, which will help us financially as well.
Yeah. If someone would like to lend a hand as a volunteer but they're not ready to become an advocate, are there opportunities there?
There are opportunities there. We do have the home visit piece that we talked about earlier. We do have to train somebody to do that. However, you do have to become a sworn CASA to do that. You know, the training, what we do after the 30 hours of classroom and then some courtroom observation is you're actually sworn in by the judge, and that provides the access to the information. So we do have ability for people to do home visits for us, which is a big part of what we do, and it gives people a chance to really get a real taste of what's going on. And a lot of times people will do home visits for us and may do a home visit on a child and realize, you know what, I think I want to take this case.
Mm. How are you feeling a year in, Howie, on the whole experience?
I'm feeling like I'm learning a real lot, and I'm getting better at it, and I'm getting more insights. But the other thing is I'm getting to know the kids a lot better. One of the things in all of the different areas that I've worked in, it seems that when the kids feel like they have a relationship, a stable relationship with an adult, they tend to do better. Urbana Middle School has a mentor program where just during school year, an adult meets with a kid 1 hour a week, and they have to be on school grounds, and mainly we just talk or read or play games or shoot baskets. Those kids do better in school, and they're more likely to go to college than if they didn't have this person. We don't go out with them. We don't go to their homes. Mm-hmm. It's just that the kid knows there's someone who cares.
And that's a mentoring program. And CASA, as we mentioned before, though, is not really in that role.
This right.
CASA, a CASA advocate, a CASA volunteer is someone who is an adult who steps up and says, here's what we need to do. And it's not, let's pull out the...
Sure. And the difference is, as a non-mentor in CASA, we aren't allowed to take the kids anywhere. We have to go to a place where they are. And it's very frustrating because I say, God, these kids might – I have these kids' books left over for my kids. I can't give them to them because that crosses a CASA boundary. My job is to be a person at a spot in terms of my physicality. I can't – I can suggest things, but I can't – cross the boundary of becoming personally involved with them beyond what we've talked about.
Yeah, you're a voice for a child or children within the court system.
Right, exactly.
So, Rush, tell us one more time if folks are interested now in lending a hand, and maybe they're looking at opportunities to volunteer. Remind us again about CASA and maybe also about opportunities to look into the foster parents program.
For foster parent opportunities, I would refer people to DCFS or the local social service agencies. For CASA, you can check us out on our website at CASA4kids.org or give us a call at 384-9065. There's also the National CASA website, which really talks about the nationwide programs and the history of CASA, and lots of stories and statistics on that website that can help kind of help you make up your mind. But we'd love to hear from people, and we always need volunteers.
Okay, very good. And maybe if CASA isn't the right fit, there's all kinds of other things you can do in the community.
Right.
You can go to the schools and mentor. You can be involved as a volunteer in all kinds of community organizations that work for the benefit of children. Well, thank you very much for coming in this morning. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thanks
here.
For having us.
Thanks for having me.
Howie Shine and Rush Record have been our guests this morning, talking about CASA, the Court-Appointed Special Advocate Program.